Good morning, honorable members. Can I take this opportunity to welcome everybody, in particular our GM for Rural Development, honorable Squatter. We also want to acknowledge the officials from Rural Development as well. Today's meeting is about the report that we need to get from the department in relation to addressing the issues related to land claims in South Col and in Alexco. This matter has been sitting with the community for many years without being resolved. And as we noticed and heard the president when he was speaking during SONA, he emphasized the issue of the land, which is closely related to radical economic transformation. So to take the cue from that SONA, we would want to know what are the challenges in relation to these two things so that we are able to assist as a committee the economic development around these two state-owned entities. Without wasting much time, I will request the Acting Secretary of the committee to give us some apologies.
Thank you, Chair. Just received a one apology from Mrs. Mazon, who is unable to attend the meeting, Chair. That's an apology, Chair.
The apology is noted, and we know Wednesday, Honorable Singh from IEP, the attend Chief Whip's Forum, and Honorable Kwangwa from UDM.
UDM.
They also attend the Chief Whip's Forum. No apology from EFF. Thank you very much. I will now hand over to the department to take us through the progress regarding the two issues. Over to you, the department.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
GM, want to make some input?
Yes, thank you very much, Chair. I just wanted to indicate that we welcome this invitation. Further, I wanted to endorse what you're saying, that both at the level of the cabinet Lekhutla and the state of the nation address the issue of land has been emphasized by our government. The matters that you want us to deal with are very important, and they are of a long-standing nature. Mine is really to introduce the delegation from the department. Next to me is Baba Otani Mtoto. He is our Deputy National Land Claims Commissioner. Then we also have the Northern Cape delegation with us here, where the matter at hand is located. We have Chief Director for Restitution, Magdalene Detoit, together with Rueda Banya. She is the director for restitution. Whilst we will be proceeding, we will be joined by the rest of the Northern Cape delegation from the side of rural development specifically. Without further ado, then Chair, I would indicate, I don't know whether the Deputy National Commissioner is doing anything or goes straight to or send it to whatever.
Before you proceed, for interest, who is the National Land Commission?
It's Nomfundo Komoto. Thank you very much. Komoto. By the way, she's actually recently married, she's got another family member, or whatever. You know, but you know, seriously, deputy again, not to me.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members. May we request your indulgence in that the first item on the agenda is the item on Alexco. are going to be taking the committee through a presentation on land claims on land where South African Forestry Company Limited operates. Our commission, the Commission on Restitution of Land Rights, we were set up initially by the interim constitution and later by the restitution of land rights. We are responsible for investigating land claims. We also are responsible for the overall land restitution program in the country. We are responsible for policies, the coordination of policies on restitution, and we also oversee restitution court cases, most of which involve the minister. Our strategic objective is the restoration of rights or the award of alternative forms of equitable redress to claimants. The Restitution Act and the Constitution require that we must restore the rights of people, and we do that in three main forms. The restoration of the rights, where we give people the land back if it is feasible to do so. If it is not feasible to do so, we then give alternative state-owned land. If that is not available, then we are also allowed to pay financial compensation. Our vision is to be a commission of excellence that ensures effective, efficient, and speedy redress. That speedy redress is provided to victims of our past racially discriminatory laws. And our mission is to provide redress to those victims in the manner that is set out in the Restitution Act. In this light, we just want to take the committee through the process that each land claim is taken through. The process is divided into four phases, and those four phases have their own separate activities which we have highlighted. The first one is the lodgement of the claim. When a person or community that lost land because of our past laws lodges a claim with the commission. The cutoff date to lodge claims was initially the 31st of December 1998. That was extended in 2014 when the President signed into law an amendment to the Restitution Act, and we then received approximately 166,000 new claims. There was a constitutional court case that challenged the constitutionality of the Amendment Act, and that challenge was successful and the Act was then set aside. So the first step then in a restitution claim is a claim must be lodged. There are those claims that were lodged before 31 December 1998, and I will take the committee through how far we are with that process. And then there are the new claims that were lodged after the amendment was enacted. The Constitutional Court said that those claims are validly lodged, but we must first finalize the ones that were lodged before 31 December 1998 before we can then come to the new ones. And the distinction between the two is going to be important for discussion later on. After lodgement, then there is a screening process of determining what land is claimed where, whether the same land is claimed by multiple people, etc., etc. Once that has been done, we conduct a preliminary investigation to determine whether, on the face of it, all the requirements for restitution have been met. So, in other the Constitution, for an example, requires that you must have lost your land after 19 June 1930. So, if in the claim form the claimant says we lost our land and they provide us with a date after 19 June 1930, then on the face of it, it looks like it qualifies. So, all the claims that on the face of it qualify, then they are accepted and by the Commission for Investigation, and after acceptance, then a claim is then published in the Government Gazette. We thereafter conduct an investigation now to determine whether that which was said in the claim form is in fact the truth, and this is where the bulk of the work of the Commission is on that phase three, which is the investigation. Once we find that the claim meets the requirements, we then proceed to the next stage of associations. Most of the land that is claimed is owned by private individuals, trusts and companies, etc., etc., and some of it is owned by the state. We will then enter, facilitate negotiations between the claimant, the state, and the current owner of the land, and that is what phase four is. So when we later present the status of the claims on subcon land, the honourable members will notice that a lot of them are in that phase four, which is negotiations. If negotiations are successful, we then refer the claim to the minister, and the minister then makes an award, we recommend an award in accordance with the settlement. If the negotiations fail, we can either refer the matter to court, or we refer the matter for expropriation. And there is post-settlement support, development support that is then provided to all those claimants that are awarded land. In terms of the earlier process, the claim is lodged by 31 December 1998. The Constitutional Court, as I indicated earlier, ordered us to prioritize those claims and deal with them first before we deal with the new ones that were lodged in terms of the amendment. So we had approximately 85,000 claims that were lodged, and so far we have settled 79,208 of those claims. They have benefited just over 20 million individuals that are coming from 408,000 households. Of those households, about 328,000 are female-headed households, and persons with disabilities that have benefited from land restitution is 1,040. We've made awards of 3.3 million hectares, and we have paid for that land, excluding land that is owned by the state, where we are lucky enough sometimes to get the land without charge. We have paid 20.6 billion rand. We have paid 11.6 billion to beneficiaries that have chosen financial compensation. Now, this is one of the matters that were raised during the State of the Nation address debate, particularly by the President in his reply, that a large majority of people choose financial compensation. And it is just over 90% of the claims where people choose financial compensation, and we have paid those people 11.6 billion rand. For those people that have been awarded land, we have assisted them to the tune of 4.2 billion to now develop and work the land. And all in all, land restitution from 1994 to date has cost the state 36.5 billion rand. We have just under 7,000 land claims lodged before 31 December 1998 that are outstanding. We are almost finished with the Free State. The Mpumalanga is the province with the largest outstanding claims, followed by KwaZulu-Natal with 1,957. For those provinces, the reason those numbers are high, it's because of the high number of claims that were launched. It is not an indication of challenges or anything like that. It's just that a large number of claims were launched in those two provinces. Coming then to the core of why we are here, Safcol operates forestry plantations on land that is mostly owned by the state. They do so through a lease agreement that was entered into just after 1994, where there was an exchange of correspondence and an agreement between ministers giving Safcon a legal right to then use this land which is owned by the state. It is mostly owned through the Department of Public Works and the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. There are a few land parcels that Safcol owns which are also subject to claims. claims. Now, for the claims that were lodged by 31 December 1998, they affect approximately 61% of plantations. And as we know, SAFCOL operates these plantations through a subsidiary, Komati Land Forest. The claims that affect SAFCOL are largely in three provinces of KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga. There are 37 all in all claims that are outstanding, which affect SAFCOL. And if the honourable members will remember, we took them through the stages of restitution. So we have a total of 8 claims that are still undergoing research. That is the investigation phase. So we have screened these claims. We are satisfied that on the face of it, they meet the requirements. We are now looking for evidence to confirm that indeed they meet the requirements. And we have 8 of those claims in that category. 7 are in Mpumalanga and there's 1 in the book. The bulk of the claims, which is 24, 1 in KZN, 4 in 16 in Limpopo and 7 in Mpumalanga, are at the negotiation stage. And I will come back to explain what are the issues and what are the challenges that causes so many of them to be at that stage. We have 5 claims that are at settlement. Awards have been made. We are now negotiating for the finalization of those claims, where we now need to enter into legal agreements that are going to result in the transfer of the land and an agreement about what is going to happen to the land. That then makes a total of 37 claims, 15 in Mpumalanga, 21 in Limpopo, and 1 in KwaZulu-Natal. Now, the claims in Mpumalanga, if SAFCOL had come to make their presentation about land claims, their numbers would be slightly different compared to us. The reason they are different is because of a change in the methodology of counting and in the methodology of processing claims in the commission. So in the past, if there is one plantation, there is 3 families that are claiming the same cadastral definition, so the same farm, we would then consolidate those and process them as one. And for the purposes of reporting and for the purposes of interacting with everyone, it would be considered as a single claim. But now with the challenges that we have faced processing such claims, when we have consolidated them, we have taken a decision to deconsolidate and treat each claim as it was lodged. But if you look at the total area that is covered, the plantations that are covered, the people that would be listed as the claimants, it is the same. One point that we also make in this slide is that there are other claims that affect SAFCOL indirectly, and we have proposed not to deal with those claims. Now, in the early 2000s, government had taken a decision to sell some of the assets of SAFCOL in a privatization type transaction, where they were selling plantations but not the land, because the land is owned by the state and there were land claims on the state. And their interest elsewhere in the country were sold to private companies. Now, in those private companies, elsewhere except mostly Mpumalanga and Limpopo, now in those private companies, the structure of the transaction was such that the successful bidders would be at the time BEE compliant, and there were shares that were set aside for the workers and for neighboring communities. The shares that were set aside for neighboring communities were then retained by SAFCOL, and they still continue to be owned by SAFCOL. So and they range between 11% to 25%, depending on which package you are talking about. Now, in all instances, in those companies, SAFCOL is a minority shareholder. They hold those shares, which in the future are going to be transferred to those neighboring communities. So they, for the purposes subcourt. They are in a completely different category. When we deal with those claims, we don't deal with subcourt directly, but we deal with the boards of those companies, and in those boards, subcourt is but a minority shareholder. So there are claims like those, but we are not going to touch on them in this presentation. Now, we said 24 claims are in the negotiations phase. What that means is that the claims have been lodged. We are happy that they meet the requirements after having conducted an investigation. We have engaged the owner of the land, which is the state, either through the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform or the Department of Public Works. And both departments have said the land is leased to Safcom. So when you find a solution, it must be a solution that involves Safcom because the land is leased to Safcom. So when we facilitate the discussions, we have then agreed that we need to come up with a model that we are going to use for the purposes of settlement of these claims. They affect 61% of Safcom. So if they are not treated properly, they could result in the end of Safcom. So we started as early as 2006 engaging with Safcom, engaging with DPE, with Department of Water Affairs and Forestry at the time, and today we are working with Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries to try and come up with a way in which we can achieve land reform. The land must go back to its original owners. A way to achieve transformation in the sector. The forestry sector is still not transformed, and the introduction of these communities that have claimed the land into the business, into the forestry business, is an important thing that we want to use to drive transformation. We don't want to kill or affect the sector negatively. Safcom is still predominantly producing, they farm pine trees, and not a lot of commercial timber planters, if you will, are into that business. So how we treat this is something that is very sensitive. So in 2008 and again after the current Minister of Rural Development was appointed, there was an approval of a principle that when we deal with land claims on commercial forestry plantations, we must return the land, the ownership of the land, to the people, but then find a way of dealing with the timber that is on the land. The initial approval that we got was that we must lease the land, and we must restore to the people the ownership of the land and not the trees. And the reason for that was that if land costs 1 rand, the trees on the land cost 4 rands. And it would not then be in the interest of the economy to restore both the land and the trees. Because instead of now spending 1 rand retaining the land that was taken, government would now be spending 5 rand retaining the land and the trees. If you look at at the profile of who our successful restitution claimant is, particularly when communities are concerned, you don't find most of the time the skills that you would need to run a plantation. There are communities that have their own plantations. There are very successful restitution beneficiaries that are managing their own plantations, where those were restored before this decision. But in the main, people need assistance in even managing the resource that would be handed over to them. And the nature of this resource is that if a fire starts, then everything is gone. Yeah? So the decision that was taken was then to say we are going to restore the land. So the title deed goes ownership of the trees remain outside of the community. And there are two models that we have been working on. One is a leaseback, is a lease model where we get the land and then we have a lease agreement for two rotations to the owner of the timber. And during the lease, there is a skills transfer program so that by the time the lease ends, there is a community that is ready to take over and then continue with the farming operation. There is then a second model which is then looking at introducing communities into the business from day one, where they would have a strategic partnership. And I will go through the detail of these models in the next few slides. Now, we then presented the two models to the forestry industry as a whole, and we have one model that we implement with Emondi. We've got a slightly different one with SAPI, and now we're developing one that is going to now help us deal with the different challenges that come with the subcall plantation. And in February 2014, we presented our model of development to subcall and the DPE of how we would prefer a strategic partnership as opposed to a lease. And before then, the industry as a whole was just focusing on the lease back. And now we had to develop it in such a way that it can be supported by the state through the Recapitalization and Development Program of the department. And the plantations differ, the communities differ, so we did not just want to focus on one, but develop two models so that if this one is not going to work, then we can have a fallback position. Now, the leaseback model, we acquire the land. So if the land is rural development land, then we request the minister the approval to transfer the land to the community. Then the full ownership of the land. The land is then leased for two rotations. Now, for Gumtree, each rotation is about 9 years. So it takes about 9 years for the tree to grow, then it's harvested, then they grow another one, then they harvest, and then off they go. But with pine trees, then it's a little bit difficult because the rotation is 35 years. So the lease then becomes a lease for 70 years. And that is one of the challenges that is there in some court because still more than 95% of what they are planting are these pine trees. They then pay rental of 7% of the value of the land, and the value of the land is reviewed every 5 years. So rental from year one is going to be based on 7% of the value of the land on the basis of evaluation. Then between year one and year five, the rent escalates using the consumer price. And then on year five, evaluation is conducted. 7% of that is paid as a rental CPI, and then it continues like that until the lease terminates. Then during the lease period, there are incentives that are provided to claimants to help guarantee the supply of raw material. What this means is that if the community can also work with the owner of the trees to look after these trees, for every ton of trees that is harvested, there is an additional amount that is paid. Currently, what those that have entered into these leases, they get an additional 10 rands per ton over and above the rent to incentivize them that when they see a fire starting, they must do something about it. When they see people stealing there in the plantation, they must do something about it because at the end of the day, it would affect then the stumpage fee of 10 rands per ton that they get. And at the end of the second rotation, in a lease transaction, the parties may negotiate new terms, and it is there that we now insist that there has to be a different model, a partnership between the owners of the land and the owners of the timber. Then there are additional benefits which apply to both, but I am then going to take you through a strategic partnership model. In this model, we still get the land and transfer it to the community. But then a partnership is then formed from day one. We have proposed that we want to acquire a share in the trees. So you still conduct evaluation of the trees, and then the community's share is going to pay for by is going to be paid for by the state by buying a percentage of the plantation. And then a new business is then established, which will now be a joint venture between the owner of the trees and the owner of the land. Now, the joint venture still leases the land, but when the business is making money, because the people are going to be shareholders in the business, then they will also benefit. There will be an even better skills transfer, because now people are part of the business that is taking place. The challenge that this presented when we were engaging with Subcol and DPE and DAF is that it potentially could result in a situation where Subcol must now have 37 subsidiaries, because now it's a joint venture with each of the 37 claimants whose claims still remain outstanding. The claims were opened, like we indicated. Those, the new ones that were lodged, the Constitutional Court interdicted the Commission from even touching them. And we know that there's going to be a bill that is going to be tabled in Parliament to reopen the lodgement of claims again, because the initial one was set aside on procedural grounds before the cutoff date for the people to come and lodge claims. So there then could be a potential of way more than 37 subsidiaries, and that is something that would not be sustainable. So we have had to then work on coming up with a strategy on how to deal with that, and I will share that with the committee later on. The partnership still pays rent because the land is owned by the people. We would like to see a guaranteed income coming to the people by virtue of them having received their land. So because there is a partnership, then that partnership will rent the land and they must still pay rental. All the things that are applicable in the lease model then are automatically applied. And in the partnership, we have identified four pillars that are going to keep it strong. If there are no tangible benefits, it's not going to work. If there is no transparency, because we are now partnering a major player in the industry with the community, and if there is no transparency and accountability, then there's going to be a problem. The executives in the joint venture, when they are wearing new shirts, when they are white, people are going to think that they are our money, if there is no transparency. So you need transparency and accountability. You need transformation. And the fact that Subcol is, at the end of the day, state-owned, that matters very little. We would like the entry of those people that were marginalized into the market. And this is one way of ensuring that that happens. And the last one, which is very important, is risk management. People that enter into partnership with communities, they have to factor in all the risks that are associated with working with the community. We have strategic partnerships between farmers and communities all the time. And the moment the community members arrive late at the meeting, now they pick up the phone, they call you as an official that was part of putting together that partnership. But these people are late. You have to have all of those things and other difficult ones part of the risk matrix, and then identify how you're going to deal with those issues. In both models, we encourage the formation of enterprises. the way that the commercial forestry businesses are now being managed is that, particularly by the likes of Mondi and Sabi, they outsource the management of the plantation. And in the list, for an example, we make sure that from day one we form a community-owned company that is going to have people trained who become officials of that company, and then that company starts rendering services to the corporate, so to the entity. They deal with alien and weed control, tree maintenance, planting, fire prevention, harvesting, and transportation. Now, in those six stages, stage one is basic. It does not cost a lot of money for you to be able to provide that service. But when you go to stage two, now doing one, stage one, so you are doing alien and weed control and maintenance. Okay? And when you are in stage three, you are doing one and two and three. And the more you get closer to stage two, the more capital intensive the business becomes. And the idea is that they will be building capital and building capacity as they are being taken through those stages, and training is then provided to them. And that is done then through enterprises that are formed. Whether there's strategic partnership, whether there is a need, we would like to see that happening as part of the skills transferred to the community. At the end of the day, at some point during the life of the strategic partnership, we would like the communities to take over and develop capacity. And these are the mechanisms that we then use for capacity to be developed. Now, one of the important things that we then factor in about which model to apply is the project size. There is a community that has claimed part of a plantation and it's only 350 hectares. Is it feasible to have a strategic partnership, a joint venture on 350 hectares? We would look at that. The availability of government funding. We said that for a strategic partnership, government community acquires shares, and whatever is payable will be paid by government on behalf of the community in the form of grant. Is that money available? What tree species is being planted? What is the age class distribution? The age class distribution will determine how much, whether you are going to be able to harvest something every year or you are not going to be able to harvest anything for the next 5 years, sometimes for the next 30 years in a plantation that was bent at some point or in the compartment that your trees affect. If all the trees are the same age, then it means there will be a year where you will harvest, get a lot of money, but then you will be then be required to plow back that money over a long period of time before you are able to harvest. And we know those things can cause a challenge. So age class distribution then becomes very important. And we also look at the technical and the management and the business expertise that exists within the community. There are communities that will elect people that will represent communities in businesses, in government structure. If those people do not have a technical understanding of what is going on, then even if there's a strategic partnership or a joint venture, it's not going to work because it's going to be one side if the other party is not understanding what is going on. We've had meetings with people who will tell us, we did this deal, we got funding from the IPC, we owe the IPC R1 million. And when you ask them how much the R1 million, they say it's a lot of money, we don't know how much it is, but it's a lot of money. So taking people with very low understanding of the technical, the management, and business expertise, and putting them into a joint venture can be a challenge. So that is Now, we went and we presented what we are saying to SAPOL ESCO, and the colleagues at SAPOL ESCO then took it to the board. And the board took a resolution that we must pilot the Niels Bohr model. SAPOL had also undertaken a study where they got an economist to come and assess and look at various other factors that would affect SAPOL's business. And all of that was taken into account when the board in 2016 said, let's pilot the Niels Bohr model. And we didn't pursue that. There is a plantation of SAPOL called the Dabbing in Venda, the old Venda, in the Limbobo province. We took it to the communities, we took the communities through, it's seven communities in total, we took them through what the Niels Bohr model would entail, what are the benefits, what are the difficulties, and after about a year of working on that, we got them to agree to a Niels Bohr model, to rotation, which means 70 years, sorry, but at any time, the communities can buy SAPOL out. They can buy SAPOL out by getting various grants from the state, by getting funding from the IDC and other development finance institutions. They can partner with the private investor and buy out SAPOL. And with those clauses, we then drafted agreements, we presented them to the communities. The communities, in fact, even signed those agreements. What was then outstanding was to then take those agreements and present them for approval by the SAPOL board, and then thereafter we take them to the Minister of Forest Development and Land Reform for his approval. Now, our colleagues at SAPOL then told us that in an annual general meeting, they were requested, the board was requested by the Minister of Public Enterprise to work on the strategic partnership model. The Niels Bohr model was not acceptable to the minister, largely based on our rural economic transformation model, saying that the Niels is not going to benefit people. Yes, there is this understanding that we cannot have a partnership with each community, but find a way. So what we've been doing with SAPOL for the past couple of months is to come up with a way in which we can cluster the claims and look at creating subsidiaries that are going to be a partnership between SAPOL and a number of communities that are going to be part of a cluster. So in a way, we are looking at trying to see whether we can create regional companies as opposed to a joint venture, a strategic partnership, supporting each and every one of the communities which will be in administrative and financial management. So that is basically where we are, honorable members. We have 37 claims that are outstanding. We have five that are at settlement. Everything has been agreed. We just need to sign on the dotted line. Then we have 24 that have negotiations. And the discussions around the model is what is now holding those claims from being settled. And then we have those things that are still being investigated. We are targeted to investigate all of these claims by the end of this financial year, so that all of them can then move over to the negotiations. The moment we reach an agreement on the model, then from there on it will be very easy, because we will then be we will have a framework and then have that framework applied in all of the things that are there. And once that has been done, then those claims will be settled and will be done with 1998 claims that are affecting SAPOL. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. It looks like we still have a long way to go in resting out these things. Honourable members,
certain departments. Those departments are looking for skills. They in whatever aspect that they are doing, I think there is a point of a certain skill that they are looking for, a certain qualification that they are looking for from that person. To me, that says, if you have that skill, you have that qualification, you are able to prosecute whatever is in front of you. Now, the Department of Rural Development have got all the necessary people in place for the claim and all the skills that they have, all the knowledge that they have, and the practical interaction with these people that they were doing day in and day out in those years. What made them to take so long for these people to get what is due to them? Your model that has been presented on your page one of your slides. I'm asking myself, if you get into a lease of land with a person for 7 years, when that person wants that land back, what will he or she go to get out of that land? I am looking at the situation of the mine, where people are mining for so many years, so big names that are owning those mines, and they leave everything like that, and without even the community around those mines can do anything on that land. If they are going to use the land for 70 years, I thought it's 70 times two. I wrote 140 years. After 140 years, who's going to benefit anything out of that land? If it's 25 times two, out of 70 years, who is going to benefit? How do you do a program that will integrate the youth of that community? So as to start, Bama benefiting when they are 35 years old, they start benefiting at the very first month of their birth from that land. When they get to school, they know that they own a land, and they are going to benefit out of that land. From the very early age. Now, if the land exists for 35 years, after 35 years, somebody else has been born in that family. Definitely, in those families, I'm sure the woman becomes Ufa or Ukona. They will be there in between that family if they are in the 35 years. And what is happening after that? Those are our people. Those are our people that we are playing dilly-dally with them. That's my assessment. I'm not sure if my assessment is right. The negotiation, the restitution process that you spoke about, the negotiations, are these negotiations an open-ended thing that may take 7 years or 25 years before they get into any agreement or verification or whatever? Or when you negotiate, you have a time frame that we will not negotiate for 2 years. After 2 years, something must start happening. And that wanted to check how your negotiations are happening. On your slide 6, that's the one that we have ended now. You showed phase 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Phase 1 is the lodgement. There were no lodgements in the three Mpumalanga. That's how I see it in this phase. Mpumalanga and Limpopo and KZN. The phase 2 has not happened. And then we have phase 3 that started with Limpopo. I just wanted to check was the research done by the department, no ordinary person came with the lodgement of the claim. You did the research, and then you went to the people, you went and spoke about the research that you have done, that for them to know what to do or if they can do a claim or not. The other question is, I want to put all my questions down here, and then I will not have any questions after that. The other question is, you say the land belongs to Lukiswa Rancho, then the trees belong to Tindi. Are the trees planted on the land, or is a God creation, and then somebody who has power and money come and say to the people that are living there that are not doing anything about the trees, these trees are trees that can have a special conduction out, that you can have a special conduction out of it. Therefore, I buy all these 700 trees and you get the land. Then you leave the land to me, you don't get the trees. Because I think if it's a God creation, whatever is on that land belongs to those people, the trees and the land. And my second last question will be, the settlement framework on the additional benefits. I just want to check, when you say owner of the trees and GDR or whatever to assist claimants with development of enterprise and providing claimants with funding assistance, these people will need training for. I don't want to say a workshop, because the workshop takes 2 days or a day, but they would need a formal training on what is the production out of those trees. Then I just wanted to check, is the department having enough resources for monitoring if that is happening? And also, it is really happening. What the department is expecting from those people who are using the land and from some call, are they doing what you are expecting? And how many people from that land have already benefited out of it? The last question is, Subcall, when he came to us, Subcall is finding it very difficult to work with the Department of Land Reform and whatever. Do you have constant negotiations, constant meetings with them? Are your meetings progressing, or do you come to a point where you do not agree and you don't have a way to go forward with whatever you need to agree with SAFCON? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me first appreciate the presentation that includes the overview of the introduction by the minister. I mean, it's an opportunity that we are getting here as members of parliament that will empower us more. And in order for us to be
assess the opportunities that exist in this sector. This is an indigenous sector, and it belongs to the community, but our communities are not aware of that. Fortunately, Chairperson, the Deputy Minister, I met him on a number of occasions, interacting with communities in our town or entire. Those are the forests that are indigenous, maybe they are combined, owned by someone, I don't know whether this man is still alive, called Mayarenti. All of them, you go towards Osunatal, is one man, I'm sure it's a man because the, I don't think when are we going to see Tatumere? Where is Tatumere? Is there any way, maybe this question is the right of what Honorable Brando has asked, in relation to this lengthy mission? Is there any mechanism legal that can assist communities now to benefit out of this, correct this, change this form of the partnership, and then make this partnership to be sustainable and beneficial to the community? Beneficial not in terms of people getting some pieces that are not used somewhere and then they are given to them. Beneficiary in terms of ownership. Now, then, in terms of development, Deputy Commissioner, there is development in the areas where we're coming from, driven by municipalities or any sphere of government. Then there is this question of, no, this particular land is unclaimed. Is there any a method that can be applied by the commission to ensure that even if land is still unclaimed, but that claim process should not stop development. Development must continue, even if it means the claimant must be consulted and there must be an arrangement. But municipalities must be assisted to continue with their development agenda, including in the land that are being claimed. Then, how do you then assist the municipalities' attitudes towards claimants? Because once people claim land, mostly the land that is being claimed will be including land that is in the urban area. And then the bosses in the municipality will say that particular area or that particular individual or that chief who is living this person is claiming this town. That chief wants to control this town, and then we don't know how are they going to work. So it is being propagated, the Deputy Minister, deliberately, because the claim aspect of land by communities is a constitutional right. It must not be seen as if they are claiming land from the municipality. It's not who is the municipality. Because in that municipality, that institution is managed by the public representative. So it means it belongs to the public, even the municipality. So the relationship between the municipality and the claimant must be addressed in order that you don't lose life for unnecessary issues of land. Because order, is important, Deputy Land Commissioner, but the usage by claimants might not be clear, and people will tend to opt for the monetary compensation as against development of their own. So how best do you utilize that? Because in the process, as they claim that particular land, someone with a big plastic full of some notes will say, no, take this, then I will assist you in this, I have money, I will buy this and that. And then they end up getting into contracts that they were not very clear as to whether they are going to be assisted or they are going to offer.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. The small comment that I have is that we've been given three presentations. One being the one that was presented, the other two which are more specific to the issue that is close to my heart. And the other one, which is more specific in terms of the area that was given concerning ELECO. But nevertheless, I would just assume that all the representations have been done today. But let me appreciate the presentation, Chair, and proceed with the. My questions. Let me start with the recent one, the Richard Feld, Crystal Feld issue that I've indicated earlier on that we have been dealing with this issue for quite some time as the committee. And every time when we interact with the ELECO department, there are particular combinations that we need.
Madam Secretary, can I interrupt you? They still have to present on support
on
ELECO.
Okay. No, that's fine. Then let me pack the other issues that relate to ELECO. The two models that you presented are most interested in the partnership model. And my question is relates to the extent to which the claimant participates when it relates to them having a say in the kind of a model that we're choosing. And I'm raising this thing because you have indicated that there's quite a substantial number of claims have not yet been processed because there is no determination that has been done in terms of the type of model that are going to be doing. So to be direct, I want to know to what extent the claimant contributes in terms of deciding on the kind of the partnership that is going to be, the kind of the model that's going to be done. And lastly would be the 7 years duration that you spoke about with the lease tech, does it apply to the strategic partnership that you presented earlier on? And I will decide to pack the rest of the issues as you indicated and wait for the last presentation. But there was a slide where you were giving us a breakdown of the claims that have been processed per province. And I would have wanted a situation where you know, where you have indicated the total number of claims that have been lost.
that we know if there's progress that has been made in processing those claims. If the slide only talks about the claims that have been processed and does not tell us how many were launched in that particular province, it becomes difficult for me to check on the progress that has been made in that particular province. So all I'm saying is I would appreciate a situation where they are then able to give us an indication of how many claims were launched per province so that we know if there is progress that has been made in that regard. And I'm raising this thing because earlier on indicated that the reason why in some provinces the number is too high of the claims that are outstanding is because of the number of claims that have been launched. So if I don't know how many were launched, it becomes difficult for me to know if the process that was done in that particular area. Thank you.
Honorable.
That takes a particular process.
Now, the second one is the teething problems in relation to this. Sometimes, let us also submit that we in the department are also very frustrated about the slow pace of how these things do happen. We will not pretend as if we are happy in the process and smooth and so forth. No? Sometimes we are more frustrated by the obstacles created by beneficiaries themselves. That is sometimes, very often, a lot of infighting among families, whether Justin is part of this family or not, and whether he or she does qualify to be part of this particular claim. You see, very, very complex. There is also a situation of the CPAs, the situation of the CPAs, which sometimes, when I was in a cabinet committee in the morning, and the Minister of Finance was briefing us on what he's going to say today, and one of the things we're talking about is the lack of an active citizenry in South Africa these days. People who expect to be basically spoon-fed by government, not understanding, and you know, CPAs get elected and they become law unto themselves. And the same people who elected them do not hold them accountable. Those people are responsible are overseeing millions of their money. And that conflict among CPAs is something that is also very, very rife. We have an option of people opting for a CPA or the trust situation. The CPA, we're not imposing on anybody, but we prefer the CPA route because it gives us an opportunity to at least, you know, interact directly with the beneficiaries. What we do after the settlement is we take a community through workshops about them working. I'm now going to the question of working the land, you know, about how they can be able to be owners of the land instead of going for the money. There's an area here that is here in the Western Cape that is successfully, that is a good CPA. They opted not to take money, but to take the land. Last year, down here, enough to edge me. I've just forgotten the name of the area. No, that name will come. They were, I mean, we took them every step of the way. And today, a ShopRite or an Edgar's, they're the direct beneficiaries to that situation. Even post them, their children are going to be owners in a direct way. We do encourage in the department, we encourage people that this thing that is now an emphasis that people must not take the land. We must not take money, we must rather offer the land. We've been doing it for years. Though our people really, you know, in spite of them, you know, I don't know whether government can make it a law that we don't give you money, we just give you land. But it's also not possible because some of the land that has to be restituted is sometimes impossible because that was land taken away in, you know, 1914, and there has been development even during apartheid time. Am I right, Mr. Sosa, that the union building itself is on? Yeah, you know. So, people who own that land, you know, what should we say to them? Should we say to them, we're going to demolish the union building, you know? So, in such a situation, I'm just making an example, you know. In such a situation, we then give people alternatives. And that alternative might end the further in the form of land that is available. Now, an interesting question is this one of development, because in fact people say the contrary. You say that municipalities should continue developing. People who own that land, they say that no, you can't develop on the land that you are saying is ours. You know. Very right in the Eastern Cape area, in the areas that you have mentioned, we're working closely. You know, last year we had to ask the OR Tambo municipality. Yeah, to go to a council meeting and take a particular decision, you know. All that, you know. Now, coming to this one, let me just say my second last point, Ndabeni here in Lagos. You know, we have, I think the land for Ndabeni is valued at 250 million. Some of the beneficiaries, unverified it, you know, conflict among the beneficiaries, others behind our back went to the master and declared themselves the responsible committee. And immediately, without informing the rest of the beneficiaries, entered into agreement to selling the land for how much? Yeah. You see? Now, the point is, we now go there because they are really stealing the land of the people they are also part of. And you don't want to go there. They just say, these people don't want you to get your money. This 100 million. And it creates a particular conflict. And we are dealing with that because we can't think that it is easy. Does that work? What I'm saying is, so many things create problems in terms of finalizing this particular process. Very complex. The ones we're dealing with here now, in fact, are at the core of that complexity. I may as well not mention the fact that major corrupt practices do take place in the process. You know. That issue of or the representatives of those people are there, you know. We have to navigate in this country a lot of which is continuing because they just co-opt some of our black people who then go with them. But I can tell you the 6th of March, we'll be going to that area called by the CPA there to celebrate because they have been able to get their land. There is some movement, it's not complete yet. Once again, I want to say that the process is a very, very, you know, and the other thing is government must take a decision around issues, you know, and I don't know whether this is not a political party meeting, but there are things in this environment that can also untie our hands in the department that can make things probably much easier. Mr. Johnson, can you proceed?
Thank you, Ian, members, for the question. The DM has dealt with the issue of in the process. The 7 year lease and the challenges that would result as a result of a 7 year lease is exactly what also worried the Minister of Public Enterprise. explain to communities how clearing that affects a particular landowner or a particular stakeholder are going to be dealt with. And it is also difficult for us to say to people who want to return your land with one hand, and they're going to use the other hand to take the land and give it to someone else for the next year. So, but with sitting with a board decision that says pilot the lease model, we then have to take that to the communities, and we after negotiating for a year, we then eventually got the communities to agree. But like I said earlier, that is not going to be implemented. It was just the communities only that have signed. Call and our minister had not signed. So we are then going to be working on that a little bit more. The time frame for negotiation is affected by numerous factors. Sometimes a claim can sit in a negotiation phase for a very long time. In the negotiation phase, the landowner always says, I dispute that this is a valid claim. But let us discuss and see whether we are not going to find each other. So if there are issues about the price that we are willing to pay, then if they don't accept, then they go back to their position of saying we dispute that this is a claim that that meets the requirements for the law. In which case, then we are required by our processes to refer that dispute to the Land Claims Court. In the past, we had a lot of disputes on the price, but now with the Property Valuation Act of 2014, the Valuer General has been appointed and they are now conducting evaluation. They determine what is just equitable compensation. If that is acceptable, we proceed. If that is not acceptable, then we either refer that to court or to expropriation. The challenge, though, with expropriation is that we still have the 1975 Expropriation Act, which is not aligned to Section 25 of the Constitution. And we had thought that there would be an Expropriation Act, but it has been referred now by the President back to Parliament for further consultation. With state-owned enterprises, with government departments, with municipalities, there is the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act that we also are required to comply with. So we do engage with organs of state as we would with any stakeholder, and if only if that fails, then we go into IGR mode, which are then steps that we need to take before we get to a position where we can declare a dispute and refer matters to. As facilitators of the process, we are required to do that. But sometimes state-owned enterprises sue us, like Alexco sued us for some money, for some of the funds that were given to Rustus Belt community. In the table that we presented, we set out all the things that must be done in a claim. So at some point in the past, all the claims would have been at lodgement stage because screening and categorization have not been done and because research has not been done. So the fact that there are dashes or zeros on the other categories just means that there are no claims in that province at that particular stage. The claims, all of them, have to move through all those six phases that are indicated there. We do assist people in the lodgement of their claims, conducting research before they lodge. And we do that more, we did it more effectively now with the second round of restitution because we had learned before 1998, it wasn't very clear what was required for the restitution process. And indeed, some people did not lodge claims because they did not even believe that a government that was so brutal to them could return, the same government could return their land. And some people do not participate. But we do assist the communities in conducting research, preparing to lodge their claims. And once their claims have been lodged, we are then required to determine whether the claims that have been lodged actually meet the requirements, whether there is evidence that people were dispossessed, and there's various types of evidence that is acceptable in our process, including hearsay evidence. It's even admissible in the land claims court. The negotiations about commercial forestry land were done with the industry. The two models were developed together with the industry, represented by a body that represents the industry. And the agreement that was had was that insofar as some call is concerned, we would then have separate discussions with them, because they are not a Monty, they are not a Sassy, they are not a Huntsman Rescue or Rand Timber or any of the other big players. And we then took the two models that were developed and started those discussions on the two models with SAFCO. Now, the industry is not the one that took a decision which said buy the land and not the tree. It was government looking at the resources that are available. We said earlier, for every one rand you spend buying land, you need four to buy the tree. And although my example is one rand and four rand, if you look at the values of the land, you look at the values of the commercial timber on the land, then we would be far, we would have done very little insofar as returning people's land in this industry, because we are also constrained by the resources that are made available to us. There are instances, and it happens a lot, that the owner of the land and the owner of what happens on the land are two different people. If you look at even the shopping centers that are being built, a lot of shopping centers are now being built in the rural areas. Most of that land is the nominal owner of the land is our minister, and requests come through communities and developers for the lease of the land, so that a shopping center can be built, and that is basically how that is what happens in the rural areas where the minister is the nominal owner. So this thing of having different owner, different person owning the land, and a different person using the land, and having access, including trees, is not something that is completely unheard of. It is difficult. It is difficult even for us to discuss that with communities. But it is the model that we have had to develop, taking into account the resource constraints that we have. The model that we presented is for commercial timber plantations. Within commercial timber plantations, there are indigenous plantations. Those are regulated and protected by laws that are administered by the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. And we do restore land with indigenous plantations, but very little activity happens in those areas. Training is continuous, and what we've negotiated with the industry is that training is not a workshop. It is in fact a boundary fund that gets created. In a few claims of Mondi, we've set about 27 claims in Mondi. They have a boundary fund that averages 5 million per community. And they take students through tertiary education, getting the skills that are going to be needed to manage the business on behalf of the community in the future. There is then a different type of training that is offered where people with certain skills then come into the operations and are taken. and they go through the ramp, all this to prepare a core group that will come from the community that will at some stage in the future take over the operations. We do have a challenge with monitoring whether what we agree on gets implemented. And we are finalizing discussions now with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries to then their forestry component to provide that monitoring capacity. Within our department, we facilitate the transaction, but we do not necessarily have people that are skilled who understand, who are foresters basically, who understand the industry, who understand the laws and what needs to be done once the transaction has been done. So we're then negotiating with them to take over that function, just like we're negotiating with the same department to take over the support and to let inform beneficiaries that have been restored land that is used for agricultural purposes. On SAFCOL land in particular, we have not settled many claims. A lot of the claims that have been settled are instances where people have said, we don't want land, we just want financial compensation. And those claims have been settled. There are a few that have been, especially those five that are at settlement phase, where we are very close to reaching settlement. And then we've also settled successfully the claims that involve where SAFCOL is also the owner of the land. And sometimes we find that plantation is very far from other plantations of SAFCOL. And in one instance in Mpumalanga, the community even has skills to look after the plantation. So we motivated to the minister to not only return land, but to return the trees as well because of the capacity that existed within the community. We do engage SAFCOL. It is difficult to understand how they could say to the community that they have a difficult working relationship with us. We interact with the CEO, with the acting CEO, we have changed letters, we interact. And there is a process that is going on at that high level. Then at operational level, there are regional coordinating meetings that are held every quarter where the manager for land claims at SAFCOL meets with the commission and representatives of the communities to discuss their progress or lack thereof in the claims, to discuss the challenges and to resolve some of those challenges. Because of the time it has taken, from the time people have lodged claims to where we are now, we are seeing a lot of people that are now even stopping SAFCOL operations. We are seeing even at engagement or discussions at the political level also happening. The politics of what is happening in the country, especially around land, is also then affecting or is being used sometimes to encourage communities to just go in and occupy, go in and disrupt. Whenever those instances happen, we are always there to work with communities, to assist them, to explain what the difficulties are. Where we are sitting right now is we have a board decision by SAFCOL that says leave. We have a decision of the minister that says go back and work on a strategic partnership model. We have said to SAFCOL, this is what is being done elsewhere, which we propose you must do. We've given them a written proposal about what must happen.
Can I request you to speed up because we still have to go to other issues on our time?
Okay. So we do have a working relationship with not just SAFCOL but DPE and even structures where we meet all of us together to discuss some of the issues. major general challenges. It is infighting within the community. We spend more time trying to help communities resolve issues on claims that we have restored than we do processing new claims. So that is a challenge at community level, even at family level. The owners of the land object on claims on validity on legal technical grounds. This claim form is not signed, and they will go all the way to the Constitutional Court to test whether there was a requirement for the claim form to be signed, even before you come to whether the people were there or not. They want exorbitant prices, and we've been able to deal with some of those challenges in the introduction of the Valois General. We work in an environment that is becoming more and more hostile, so our attrition rate is very high. We are losing skilled officials who were able to deal with claims over a long time. So those are the some of the general challenges. And because we pay for land, we are heavily dependent on how much money gets allocated for land restitution. When we plan on what to deliver, we need to know how much are going to be given over the MTF, and then using those resources, what can we deliver? We don't look at how many claims are ready, because even if we were to take them to the settlement phase, the minister won't be able to commit the state to more than the funds that have been provided to him. Transparency is a company. It was started by a guy called Hans Marensky. He passed away a long time ago, and he left a fund, and that fund is now being used to do a business. They are one of the beneficiaries of that process I mentioned earlier, where some of the subcon assets were bought. They bought through a company called Singis Forestry Products. They own and they manage a plantation. They own and manage a plantation from Davil and KZN all the way to the other side of Umtata and Koko. We can travel the whole day just still on their plantation. That's how big it is. They have 162 communities that they work with, and Koko, Habuba, Zia, and 12 other communities have lodged claims. In that company, Fastcall has 11% share holding in it. It's one of those companies where we said we have not included them here because they are controlled elsewhere. The reason why people say it's Merensky, the company that operates is in fact in it, but the majority shareholder is Merensky. And the operator, the one who does the farming on a daily basis, is that Merensky. There is progress that has been made in that front, and that is why we were taking the Deputy Minister on the 6th of March. Municipalities, the DM has touched on it, but what is important is that in TAC, the KSD municipality can't develop Mthatha any further. The land that is needed to develop is claimed. And the communities have gone all the way to the Constitutional Court, and they have an order from the Constitutional Court that says people lodge their claims because they want restoration. And restoration must come first. And the municipality in that case has been saying, no, we need to develop. And the Constitutional Court says restitution is a constitutional right. Until such time that there is an agreement about how to settle these claims, there must be no development. And that is what is now being used by communities to say to us, we are not opposed to development. We just want development to take place once you've given us our land. So rather than it being the municipality and developers entering into business arrangements to develop the land, they want as the owners of the land to be the one to enter into such transactions. Then I've spoken about the model. The only thing that is left maybe on the model to say is that If it's a strategic partnership, then we do not need 7 years anymore. The reason we need 7 years is because it's two rotations. You are basically giving the owner of the tree an opportunity to plant a tree, harvest it, plant another one, harvest it, and off they go. It is not that much of a of an issue when we are dealing with people that plant gum, because it's eight. It's literally at least between 10 and 20 years. We need leases that are on paper for 20 years, but we are on year 11 now on with one of the communities. And the company, which is Monty, which is planting the tree, have already given them notice to say those compartments, when we harvest, you must plant, because we won't have enough time to plant, and we are still on year 11. We agree the venti is very difficult, and that is why we're working very hard with support to build and finalize the process of having a strategic partnership model. Then we apologize for the last point, honorable members, on how we presented the numbers, but on slide number 4, the column on claims is the claims that we have processed. So if you look at KwaZulu-Natal, for an example, we have finished 15,343 claims. And on slide number 5, in KwaZulu-Natal, in slide number 5 has outstanding claims. In KwaZulu-Natal, we have 1,957. So what was lodged would then be a total of what is outstanding and what we have settled. And in the way that we thought we would present, we did not factor that in. But if one does the addition of, there is a column on claims on slide 4 and the column on outstanding on slide 5, one would then get a total. So in KwaZulu-Natal, just as an example, we have settled 15,343 claims, and what is left is 1,957, which is what we were saying earlier. Thank you very much.
I'm advised we need to get the next presentation by us. So 10 to 12 according to my watch, and we will appreciate if the presenter can just go straight to the issues so that we are then able to project this to the deliberation.
We will then, with your indulgence, skip to right to this slide on the background of the Alex Gore, of the Southland claim. Just very briefly, the claim was lodged by a certain Mr. Hengsmith on behalf of the community before the closing date in 1998. The claim was then referred to the Land Claims Court, and a settlement proposal was presented to Cabinet. So it was at a very high level, the settlement proposal. The Minister of Public Enterprises entered into negotiations, and this then culminated into the signing of a deed of settlement and a memorandum of understanding with Alex Corp, and that was way back in 2007. Approximately 2,630 beneficiaries were verified in towns in the Makolan, such as Sandrift, Kubus, Lekkerson, Exeter, Fontaine, and Alexander Bay. So one can see that this is a very large community and it spans many, many towns in the Makolan. In October 2003, the Constitutional Court concluded that the real character of the title that the community possessed in the Rifter Stout was the right of communal ownership under indigenous law. The content of the right included the right to exclusive occupation and use of the Rifter Stout by the community. The deed of settlement signed by the parties in 2007 directed that at least two trusts and a number of companies must be established to manage and operate the various business operations of the communal property association. So one can see here that the legal entity that was established is the communal property association, but under that CPA there are two trusts and many, many companies which must manage the operations of all these operations. So the income from the Rustaself Investment Holding Company to be distributed in terms of a policy, a distribution policy, to the CPA members for educational programs, entrepreneurship and social development, etc., etc. Now the Rustaself Community Trust was established having 100% shareholding in the Rustaself Self-Development Company, and the RSDC has subsidiary companies which are the Rustaself Agricultural Holding Company, the Rustaself Property Holding Company, the Mining Company, and the Environmental Rehabilitation Company. Opportunities were identified by the CPA to ensure that environmental damage was repaired and further restricted in this area. The final compensation made available by the Land Claims Commission was transferred to the Rustaself Investment Holding Company as follows. 50 million rand was transferred for recapitalization of the agricultural and maricultural properties or for other developments which would benefit the entire membership. 190 million rand was then transferred to be grown and invested in terms of an investment policy and to provide an income for the Rustaself Investment Trust. 45 million rand was transferred to the Communal Property Association for property development by the Rustaself Property Holding Company, but this was to be managed by the Investment Holding Company. The Community Trust is obliged to disburse income from the Rustaself Self-Development Company to CPA membership. Now, there is a status since 2011. The Rustaself Cedar Hub Communal Property Association has since its reconstitution in July 2011 consisted of two factions. These two factions, one is opposed to the previous CPA and those who are on the CPA since 2010. The Regional Land Claims Commission in the Northern Cape and the Department of Rural Development has since 2011 implemented a program of regularization. Concerted attempts were made to align the CPA and the community around the common goal and to unite the various factions. So from this one can see that there is a lot of infighting that has happened and is still happening in this community. The CPA was regularized and is generally complying with the Act, the Communal Property Association Act, except for regular communication with the general members of the CPA. The term of the office of the CPA executive members have expired, and an elective AGM has been planned for April 2016. However, the CPA was unable to convene the AGM due to a lack of resources. The Department of Rural Development and Land Reform will facilitate a meeting with the interim committee members at Alexander Bay later in February and later with a broader Rustaself Cedar Hub CPA community in the four towns, which we mentioned earlier. A number of engagements were already held with the two factions and their legal representatives in order to resolve the impasse, but the rift between them seems to be widening. Now, in terms of all this dissatisfaction and infighting, we have come up with a few recommendations. We recommend that the task team which has been established between rural development and public enterprise is supported by the management echelons of the two departments, and that this then be led by the Land Tenure Administration within rural development. We recommend that a rescue communication plan must be compiled by an independent panelist or transactional advisor and should consider the key elements of governance or governance enhancement program which goes beyond mining and the CPA, since all the institutions need to cooperate and align themselves in the interest of improving the lives of the members of the community. We spoke earlier about development on the land, and in this case it's mining. And as rural development as a commission, we've always identified here that there is a conflict in land use. Because as we say, after all this development, well, after all this mining, what happens? What does the community get in the end? all the structures established by the settlement agreement must be rationalized, as we saw we have the communal property association, which is the parent body. You have two trusts and you have various companies. So what we are recommending here is that we rationalize these structures and perhaps decrease some of them, because it's very complex. And if you look at the people on the ground, the actual community members, they don't really understand all these structures. All that they know is that they were allocated, or the land claim has succeeded, the land claim was settled, yet they remain poor. They go to sleep hungry. So all these structures are really not benefiting the household level. The Department of Rural Development to request the land rights management facility to nominate a panelist to serve on the CPA on behalf of the department, or alternatively, the department nominates an official to serve on the CPA. The Department of Rural Development and the DPE to work in collaboration to resolve the strife within the community and to workshop the amendments to the deed of settlement. Essentially, there are amendments which are required to the deed of settlement if we are to rationalize all these structures. We will have to amend the deed of settlement. The Department of Rural Development and the Department of Public Enterprises draft a term of reference for the appointment of a project management team, which includes a transactional institutional advisor to unravel the knots and the tensions between all the structures and to work with the panelists to resolve the unrelenting conflict within the CPA structures and the community at large. The project management team must compile a training schedule to upskill the executive members of the legal entity. A community meeting must be held with the two ministers, Minister of Rural Development and the Minister of Public Enterprises, sooner rather than later, in order to communicate this action plan or the recommendations that we are putting forward. So in brief, that is our presentation.
Oh, yeah,
it's
inviting. Thank you very much for the presentation. All of members, let's interact with the presentation. So what then?
The data report talks about some perception that only a select few are benefiting, either through a LESCO or the restructuring structures. And you know, if perceptions are not addressed, they become reality for those who hold them. And I would appreciate if you can then clarify this particular perception, that in the process of you trying to address this challenge, there are some few people who are benefiting through LESCO from the status report. The last one talks to you to this infighting between the CPAs, and I would appreciate if you can just clarify us which one, according to you, is the legitimate CPA that you deal with from time to time. If you were to say you want to convene a meeting with the CPA, which one do you meet trying to resolve this issue? And I'm raising this thing because you, these are issues that we have been dealing with for quite some time. And my take is that when we convene entities as a portfolio committee, we don't convene entities as a compliance matter. In all these engagements that we have with entities, in particular SAFCOL in this case, there are certain recommendations that we make, and we'll appreciate that if the entity comes back, you are then able to take us through in terms of progress that you have made with regard to the issues that you have raised in the last meeting. As I've indicated, this is not our first interaction. We have interacted with you, I think, even in sometime in October or November, around some of these issues relating to the restructured communities. So all I'm saying is that we'll appreciate if when we meet with you within next time, you must then be able to tell us in terms of the issues that you have raised, the portfolio committee has raised in the last meeting, this is how far we've gone. Or in the process of us dealing with these issues, these are the challenges that we came through. Thanks.
Department? And similarly with the
electrical issue. In 2014, the commission has said that they will appoint panelists on to regularize the CPA to reduce this infighting. Since then, there hasn't been progress with two and a half years down the line. So the engagement with the minister, maybe if you ask him in how can this engagement or the regularization be fruitful. But the DP is currently working on India. They want to understand to well understand how far and what can be done. I'm hoping to get the report. They are coming back today. I'm hoping to get the report of the officials who are doing this in the local community.
On this issue, acting commissioner, do you want to comment on that?
Honourable Chairperson, in the report, regularization is reported on. The community that we are talking about in the background to the claim, we mentioned that it is land that involves many communities, and they are very far apart. So it is always going to be difficult for one CPA to be a united force in the face of there being many communities. The strategy that the minister has been driving has been one that says, number one, we need to separate between governance, which involves looking after the land and development, which must then have its own entity that is just going to drive development, and then do away with all the other trusts and all the other companies that are there, which are causing a lot of confusion in the communities. And there is a process that the minister has started, which is going to culminate into a proposal being made to cabinet on the reduction of the structures that are there. In a normal claim, it is our minister that would approve the settlement of the claim, but in this claim, it was approved by cabinet. So every change that takes place requires the engagement of cabinet before it can be implemented. There is work that is being done towards simplifying, because even when the minister was briefed, his immediate response was that this is too complex for me to understand. What about those community members? There is also a lot of money that is involved in this claim in particular. Money that has been paid in terms of the settlement agreement. At the time the settlement agreements were done, the communities were legally represented by the Legal Resources Center, structures were put up, we were required to transfer money. And a lot of money has been transferred, and investigations have to be done about what has happened to those money. One of the reasons there is infighting within about the CPA committee is because those are the people at the end of the day that have control over these finances. So any assistance, even from this committee, is going to be welcomed, because we spend a lot of time, like we indicated earlier, trying to resolve issues that and we use the same people to resolve those issues that are required to settle the claims that are outstanding. Thank you.
Ma'am, are you able to answer the concerns raised by honourable members?
Thank you very much, honourable chair. I'd like to begin with the staff establishment in the Commission on the Execution of Land Rights. I don't think that there is any government department that will ever be satisfied with a warm body that they have sufficient warm bodies with sufficient skills to be able to discharge the mandate of that department. Equally so in the Commission of Institutional Land Rights, we will never have enough warm bodies to discharge our duties, but particularly in the Northern Cape. It's a very large province. In fact, it's the largest province in the country, but in terms of population size, we have the least. So resources that is allocated to the Northern Cape is always, very, very little. So in terms of warm bodies, no, we do not have sufficient staff. As the Commission indicated earlier, we are spending so much of time in the Commission on post-settlement matters after we have settled, more than what we are concentrating on settlement. So much so that much of our resources are going into that sphere rather than settling. And we know that since 1998, people who have lodged are still waiting for us to come and settle their claims. So you can imagine if you think that people are waiting years, those people who have lodged prior to 98 are still waiting for us to settle. But now because our resources are going into post-settlement issues, we are only able to settle a very low number of claims, especially in the Northern Cape. So we do not have the required amount of warm bodies to deal with these issues as required. The matter, Honourable Chair, about perceptions. The perceptions which are become a reality after a while. In this particular case, we must remember that Amisco is a state-owned company that is mining on private land. The land in this claim is owned by the Cedarhub Rustenburg Communal Property Association. Now, it has taken a long while, as one can imagine, for the two structures, Alexco and the CPA, to realize and to actually take up their role, the one as property owner and the one as a lessee that is mining somebody else's mine land. Much of the problems that are existing currently in the Western South is caused by Alexco. Alexco has been causing division in this community for a very long time. Imagine at a very simple household level, if you are neighbors, I'm living in this house, another person living in this house, here comes Alexco, decides to paint and beautify and green up this house, whereas the neighbor's house is left to ruin. And you must understand, Alexander Bay is along the coast. You can understand how houses deteriorate very quickly. So these are the very simple type of things that is causing so much of division and unhappiness in the community. Obviously, the neighbor whose house now is not seen to at all working, this guy is benefiting somewhere, somehow. This guy is getting more than me. And that, at the simplest level, is where unhappiness starts to happen. For a simple example, Alexco decides to do training. They decide to train certain members on the executive council and not others. They bring them to Cape Town, they train them. What then about the other members which they leave behind? You understand? So even within the executive committee, then, there is this unhappiness which is causing a lot of the strife and division in this community. Now, in terms of the panelists, in 2014, the commission appointed a panelist. Alexco refused to work with the panelists. In fact, when we appointed the panelists, the first thing we required was a fact-finding report. Give us a fact-finding report to tell us what exactly are the facts so that we can brief our political principles. Alexco refused to work with the panelists. In fact, when he went to a certain meeting, Alexco required him to provide his credentials, and refused him entry into a meeting. So there were a lot of these challenges and resistance which we have picked up from Alexco. And I think that, we will have to work on this relationship so that, as with SAFCOM, where they already have a good working relationship between government departments and this entity, we'll have to do the same with Alexco. We need to build up a relationship so that, we can benefit the people, because up to now, since the claim was settled in 2007, up to today, people have not really benefited Meanwhile, Alex still continues mining. So we really need to repair and work on that relationship. There is no beneficiation. In fact, Alex Corp always declares that they are in the red, they are not really making money, and therefore benefits can't flow. We find that very hard to believe. Alex Corp has, in terms of the very same deed of settlement, Alex Corp owns a rental, obviously, to the property owner. That rental to today has not been paid. Minister Brown has instructed Alex Corp in 2015 to find a way to pay this rental, which is about 45 million rand to the community, so that they can at least see some benefit. So today that rental is not paid. Now granted, there are issues, there are infighting, there is a lot of strife in this community, but a lot of the strife is because people are poor. People go to bed hungry. These claimants who have been settled, the claim has been settled, some of them are dying without having realized the benefit of this land claim. And we must remember, a land claim is lodged against government, not against the commission, not against the Department of Rural Development, but against government. Because it is the previous government that have dispossessed these rights in land from our people. The legitimacy of the legal entity, which in this case is the Cedar House, Rustenbelt Communal Properties Association, in many cases, this is the core of the property. Who is the legitimate structure which is managing these vast assets in the Rustenbelt? Now, as we have been saying, there is a lot of infighting. In fact, of late, within that executive committee, they've taken each other to court because of legitimacy issues. There's two factions. This one faction has taken the other faction to court because they believe that in terms of their own constitution, there is no legitimate CPA. They are trying to insist for the Department of Rural Development are taken to AGM. We all want that. We do not want to play Big Brother as government all the time. Minister of Rural Development always says, once you have given the land, people must manage these resources which have been allocated. But in this case, it has been very difficult, and I think it will be irresponsible if we just withdraw and leave people to fight and fight and fight, the fight will never end. So in this particular case, the CPA that has been recognized is the CPA which has been elected in 2015. Now we do admit that we need an annual general meeting where there needs to be an election. We have tried to go to with the Department of Rural Development to take this committee to elections, but they have failed because they both have lawyers, they both in court. We are deadlocked at the moment, and we think that we need a political resolution of this matter, because we have tried again, we have established the staff team with the DPE and so on and so forth. We've tried to work together, and all our efforts have failed, and we now require a political intervention in this matter. I'm not sure if the Department of Rural Development would like to add, my colleagues would like to add to the issue. Chair, thank you.
No, I think the information given to us today is very important and worrying at the same time. We will see how do we process this matter as a committee, and we will make sure ourselves on this particular issue is critical. Thank you very much. regularly so that we remain and complete the work of the committee.
Thank you, ma'am.
What are the issues and how best